Celtic Stuff Live, the only toll-free call-in webcast produced specifically for Celtics fans. With your hosts, Jughead, JB, and the Duke. Celtic Stuff Live. And now, Jughead, JB, and the Duke.
Welcome, everybody, to the June 17th, 11 days away from the draft, June 17th edition of Celtics Stuff Live. And now we're on Celtics Blog. You see us there. You've got the radio player to the left in the sidebar. This is your first time. You're already listening to the show, so you've figured it out. We're lining up guests for the draft night show. We're going to talk about that in a little bit. But first, John Duke, how are you this evening?
Oh, I'm great. Boy, I'm living high. All kinds of draft rumors, trade rumors. Oh my, it's been great. And happy Father's Day to all the fathers out there. Happy Father's Day to both of you guys. This is Jug and my first Father's Day. Well, it's my first Father's Day. It's your first with your little one, your latest little one.
That's right. And, she's 9 months today, John, on lucky number 17, I'm telling you.
And 10 months today for my boy, so it's fun. We just went up to the Olive Garden up in Augusta, and he just made a complete mess of the entire place. But they didn't kick us out. We had a good time, and I just got back in time to talk about some Celtics. So that was my plans for today. How about you, JB? How'd you spend your Father's Day?
Well, I don't think anybody cares. I don't even care.
I do care. I care. That's why I ask. I wouldn't have asked if I didn't care.
I'll give it to you offline later. I'm riding on a hot rumor here, and I'm more interested in where Kobe Bryant's going to go, because it seems there's a lot of hot talk involving the Celtics now. Chad Ford dropped something earlier this week about the Bulls sending Gordon, Tyrus Thomas, and P.J. Brown to Boston. The 9 pick goes to L.A., and Bryant goes to Chicago. Pierce goes to L.A. We didn't think much of that. Other than our friend Eric Pincus, who is going to be on our draft show, he's been on several times. He's a credentialed reporter for the Lakers, as well as the Clippers for Hoops World. He's been saying for quite some time that the Lakers are fed up with Kobe, and that he insulted Buss, and that he was as good as gone. He's been saying it for a couple of weeks, long before Buss's younger son got on and blogged about it, which everybody also dismissed. But now Chad Ford has it, and we can follow that up with a little gossip from the Real GM board. Celtics thug says, I was out with a player on the team. He told me, got word today, that Paul Pierce could get gone, and he might be gone with him. I asked him where to. He said, let's just say Pierce, wouldn't have to leave where he's at now. We all know he's out in L.A. Then Kowanak posted a little later, 2 days ago I saw P.J. Brown at a TGI Fridays in the northwest suburb of Chicago. I chatted him up, and I overheard him saying that it's basically a done deal that Kobe is going to Boston and Chauncey Billups is coming to Chicago. Not sure how much validity this holds. And then we heard from Eric Pincus, and he said that Kobe won't go to Boston. He wants to go to Chicago, he doesn't know where the Billups thing comes in, because they've already got Henrik. But there's a lot of talk right now about Paul Pierce. The one thing that the Lakers wanted, and this was what Chad Ford said, we've heard it before, they want a star back. They want him to go to the Eastern Conference, and Paul Pierce, a local boy in L.A., and he's a star, and we may have something coming up with the Bulls that gets us a couple players in the 9th pick.
When JB was a kid, they didn't have no Father's Day. They didn't celebrate fatherhood, and we liked it. I love it. All right.
I had Chinese food with my kids. We watched an Oliver Stone interview. Went to meditation in the morning, and there you go. That was Father's
Day. There you go. Thank you, JB. Hey, listen, that is the hot topic, though. I'm really sick of the Kobe talks. I don't want Kobe in Boston. I know he's a great player, maybe one of the best of this generation, but no thank you to Kobe, is my opinion. And I'll probably take a lot of flack for that, but I'm sick of the Kobe talks. And some of these rumors, I mean, they're just ridiculous. But before we break that down, I just want to say we're going to have Sean Grandy on in the first hour at 7:15, and then Home Run Baker, you've seen him. He posts on the C-Blog forums. He's going to be our guest on the second hour. He'll be coming on about 8:15. And we got a number of emails and voicemails to get to, and a number of topics, as you know, counting the Kobe one that JB just laid out for you all. And I want to just run down a little bit of the draft night show here before we get into all the topics. This is pretty much going to be the only chance during a very busy night for us to mention this, but I just want to let everybody know who we're going to have on the show draft night. The list is a spectacular list. It's a lot of the supporters of the show. And I just want to, you know, say thank you to them for coming on our show on the biggest night of the year, as well as, you know, making Celtics Stuff Live, you know, as such a success as it has been in the first year. But I'm going to run down these names. Steve Bulpet, Mike Gorman, Sean Grandy, Mike Fine, Scott Souza. We're going to have a number of Celtics bloggers to start the show. That's Tenacious T from MVN, Elrod Enchilada from Real GM, TJ and Alex from Celtics 247, Red from Red's Army, and Fabio. JB, what's the site? He's got a couple of them. He's got the Italian Celtics site and Celtics Nation,
Pride.
Right? That's the other one,
yep.
Celtics Nation.
Yep. Yeah, he's affiliated with Celtics Nation. I believe Italian Celtics Pride, he started that group, and he's been much, you know, one of the integral members of that group since its inception.
Excellent. And in addition to that, we're going to have Eric Weiss and Henry Abbott, who are going to be at Madison Square Garden. They're going to be checking in that evening as well, based on their availability. And Eric Pincus, another big supporter of the guest and a member of JB's Celtic Stuff Yahoo message boards, a Lakers writer or LA writer, I guess. He covers both teams.
He's going to be at the Lakers headquarters, by the way, that night.
Excellent. So, you know, if this Kobe trade has any merit, he's going to be an excellent guest on the show, and he's going to be able to, you know how it is, they break these trades, but you never get the actual, you know, details of the trade until hours later. We might be able to get a bit of a head start on that, you know, having Eric on the scene. And we also have a couple of probablys in Gary Tanguay and Jeff Goodman, and possibly even Peter Vesey. But that's a tentative right now. We're kind of waiting to see how his night's going to shake out. But those are some very notable guests, and I just want to let everybody know, you know, that we're still looking for sponsors, and you can inquire about that by emailing CelticsBlog@gmail.com. We'll get you all the information. Jeff Clark will be handling that, you know, as far as getting you the information on the costs and the different ways that you can sponsor the show. We're definitely looking forward to that. And that the money that we're looking to raise for Draft Night Show is going to cover the cost for the new server on Celtics Blog, as well as keep our show, Celtics Stuff Live, going into next season. So, you know, if you're a supporter of the show and you happen to have a small business and you'd like to support the show as well as get some advertising for your business, definitely see us. Again, CelticsBlog@gmail.com. And finally, a big thanks to Celtics Kid, who gave us a little bit of a spruce up on the Celtics Stuff Live logo. He did the new one. You'll see it there. It says only on Celtics Blog, Celtics Stuff Live, you're on the air with. It's right there. And really professional work. And by the way, Celtics Kid does do graphics for a living, and you can check out his website at gofetchmarketing.com. A big thanks to Celtics Kid. Two topics I want to hit up. One is you know, last week we had Steve Bulpet on the show, and he told us he had something juicy for the next day. He said, you know, possibly there was going to be an article. I'm going to read the first line of the Monday morning article. The title was "No More Excuses Tolerated for the Celtics." He says, "The writer believes the too young excuse died with the Celtics season late on the night of April 18th. The coach believes that notion is idiotic." He pretty much has the same opinion of the writer on this issue. I love it. And he goes on. He says, "We figured Rivers would jump at the chance to embrace the no excuses mantra. We were wrong. No, I don't think you can just say we're ready," he said. "I'm realistic. If our guys are ready to win, we'll win. If they're not and they need another year, then we need another year. There's no years on it. That's such idiotic stuff. You just don't know when it's going to come together or if it's going to come together." And I have to say, Doc Rivers is right, but I don't think the extension that he signed necessarily gives him a full vote of confidence with that opinion. And I think that the fans, you know, where maybe the organization is accepting that, but I don't know that the fans are. What do you guys think, John?
Well, I think it was a pretty. I don't know if stupid is the right word, but I can't understand. Doc Rivers is a mystery to me. The guy, he talks out of. I don't know if you could talk out of both sides of your mouth at the same time, but. I really don't know where he comes from. I think it comes from, the amount of time he's spent in the TV world, where, you say things that, at times they are, controversial. At times you say things that you half mean, but you don't really mean them. I mean, there's a couple instances this year I can think of where, Doc chose to say the more salacious quote. And give that to the writers, which is why they like them. They like him, by and large. And then he comes out with these ridiculous statements like he had for Steve the other day. I'm just, it calls into greater question his ability to coach and to lead a team. He is, I'm not going to take issue with the quality of what he said. I'll let you guys do that. But to me, the type of person that Doc Rivers has indicated himself to be, and the inconsistencies in his belief system, it certainly leads me to believe that, how can if I were a player under his liege, how could I take him seriously? I mean, if we see it and he gets quoted, one or two sentences, every other day, imagine those guys who have to hear his crap, night in and night out. I mean, something to think about. I mean, I wonder how much they really are solidly behind him.
Yeah, it's well. I want to get to an email before we go to the break. We got about 3 minutes before we're going to go get Sean Grandy, and it's kind of on this vein with Bull Pett, who, by the way, if you didn't listen to last week's show, you definitely need to go back and take a look at that, because Bull Pett gave us a wealth of information, both past and present, and was an excellent interview. Really, just I can't even thank him enough. That was great. And so here we got an email from Tom from Walpole, Mass. He says, great show. Has Steve gotten any more info about Jeff Green going back for his senior year at Georgetown? I think that Green is the best all-around player after the Oden and Durant duo. He is a tough defender, which I feel is what the Celts may need is right now. Steve beat me to this comment as I was typing. So he was emailing us during the show. He says, also, is there any interest in acquiring Ron Artest? At the end of the season, the Kings and Artest weren't on the same page, and it appears he might be shopped. I don't think we got any more info on Jeff Green going back to Georgetown for his senior year, except that the deadline is tomorrow. Is that right, John?
Yeah, that's right. The deadline is tomorrow, but and both he and Spencer Hawes are two guys that haven't hired agents and generally are thought of as, are the most likely to go back. But there's some talk in recent days that Spencer Hawes has a promise from the Minnesota Timberwolves at number 7. And, of course, Jeff Green, having met with the Celtics here late last week, you have to wonder, exactly about their interest there. Scott Souza had a great article today. Scott had a great article today with some more insight on that workout and the thoughts of Doc Rivers and Danny Ainge about Jeff Green's game and how he would fit here in Boston. A little bit about how he'd fit here in Boston. And I thought it was, a pretty good take in terms of where Jeff Green fits. Obviously, from last week, you all know, Green is the guy I'm kind of looking at that I think if they do hold the pick that he'd be someone I'd hope that they would look at. But, I know others have their choices, and certainly if they do trade down, Green certainly would be at the top of the list. And though I think JB might go with Spencer Hawes, am I right?
I still think we need a big. I mean, there was a terrific article today in Scott Souza's column in the Metro West about Green and how unselfish he is. A lot of people criticized him for only taking three or four shots in the semifinal NCAA Final Four game against Ohio State, and you know, Scott was explaining, he was double-teamed, and that's what you do. That's how you play. And having a player like that who can score but isn't going to try to force it and looks for other players, a good passer, very good defender, any team would like to have him. And, you know, if Pierce were traded, we need somebody at that small forward spot, and maybe he's the guy. We still need somebody big, but if we get back the 9 pick and... you know, maybe we still keep the 5 pick if we got Yee or Yee and Haas or Yee and Green or Haas and Green. You know, there'd be some nice combinations there. And, you know, I'm being more and more sold on Green as an option if we get a big with another pick or pick up a big in a trade.
Well, you know, we've got a couple of voicemails to play later in the show about the picks and also to talk about the trade down options. Outside of just trading the pick for a big-time veteran, like the you know, the Kobe Bryant discussions we've heard, which goes back a little bit to Tom's email, just asking if there's any interest in acquiring Ron Artest. I mean, I don't know about you guys, but I put Ron Artest on the same level as Kobe. You know, as far as you know, I'm not really interested in bringing them in and disrupting some of the chemistry of the young guys that we have here. Although maybe that'd be you know, received with open arms. I'm very cautious. I think we put a lot of effort into clearing the attitudes out of here. We'll be back with Sean Grandy.
Celtic Stuff Live is brought to you by Garber Family Dentistry in Salem, Mass. Garber Family Dentistry is a practice that treats both children and adults using modern equipment. That includes intraoral cameras so that you can see what they see, and digital radiography. That's 90% less radiation than conventional x-rays. They also use sedation for people who experience anxiety during dental procedures. That's Garber Family Dentistry. Give them a call, 978-744-8495.
How about a 1.5 million? 1-1, 1-1, go ahead. Thank you. 1-1 now, 50 out of the bid. 1-1 now, 50 last call. Sold 1,000,001. Thank you. Bidder number 225.
Allen Auction Company, specializing in distinctive properties and municipal auction services. Using innovative sales and marketing strategies, they ensure that the auction day experience is both positive and profitable. Visit their website, allenauction.com, or call 781-592-8100.
Are you in the market for rare coins or precious metals? Gold Rarities Gallery is one of the nation's leading rare coin and precious metals dealers, where you'll deal directly with the owner and not a salesman. Highly competitive prices and a selection of high-quality coins ranging from a few $100s to major seven-figure rarities, Gold Rarities Gallery has placed some of the finest and rarest coins ever struck at the U.S. Mint. Put over 20 years of coin market experience to work for you. Visit Gold Rarities Gallery on the web at goldrarities.com. That's goldrarities.com. You'll be glad you did.
Back, and we're still trying to get a hold of Sean Grandy, so stay tuned. But I just want to say, I think you heard a new commercial in a commercial break. It's the Gold Rarities commercial, goldrarities.com. They're sponsoring our draft night show. Big thanks to them. They've got naming rights. It's the Celtic Stuff Live draft night show, sponsored by Gold Rarities, or the Gold Rarities draft night show. Make sure you check out their website, goldrarities.com. You can say it however you want to say it, right, JB? I mean, just as long as we make sure that you know that it's Gold Rarities is involved. And you can also visit their website by taking a look at the left sidebar on CelticsBlog.com. You know, big thanks to them. I hope you guys enjoyed the new commercial. We've been looking for some new commercials around here.
I don't know if you mentioned when you were talking about the draft night possibilities. We're on a new site. I think most of our listeners know this. Maybe some of the people that download don't. But we've merged into Celtics Blog. And as I understand it, Celtics Blog had 23 million hits in May. And I think Jeff said that they get approximately 28,000 different readers, visitors per day, and that they're site traffic is on a par with the Boston Herald. So, you know, we're no longer that little CelticStuffLive.com that might have gotten 30, 40, 50 people a day on a good day. We're talking 28,000 visitors. And anybody out there, you know, that we're trying to appeal to advertise their service, their company on our show, you're also going to get banners and links to your site on our page, on the front and home page of CelticsBlog.com. It might be one of the great bargains in advertising when you consider how much it would cost to advertise in the Boston Herald or another web outlet that, if there are many, there aren't many that have as much traffic as Celtics Blog. So, you know, I hope people start to consider that and get back to us because, the price won't always be this low. One of these days, we're going to be inundated with requests from some of the bigger companies that will want to advertise with us, and this is your chance to get in and, we'll make you a nice deal for the draft night show. We'd like to sign some people up for next season for starting, I believe, November 1st. And now's a good time to jump in, please.
Well, let's talk a little bit about the Kobe Bryant rumors a little bit since we've laid this down. John, do you want to – I think there were two insider rumors that Chad Ford posted. Do you want to run those down?
Yeah, well – basically, there were two scenarios that Chad Ford laid out. And, of course, let's take Chad Ford for what he is at this point. But he was trying to construct possible scenarios that would make sense. And his first scenario was a three-team deal. Both of these were three-team deals. The first one, sending Kobe out to... out to Chicago, a package of Ty Thomas, the number 9 pick, Ben Gordon, and a re-signed P.J. Brown, signed and traded, I should say, to the Washington Wizards, who would then say Gil Arenas and chump change to L.A. The idea being, of course, that Gil Arenas is going to opt out and, they may be able to free themselves of that, but I'm not really too big of a believer in that. I don't think that Gil Arenas is going to go anywhere. I think he'll end up staying right where he is. Number two, which obviously interests all of you listening, is an identical package from Chicago, still sending Kobe to Chicago, but the one that interests you for this reason is that package of players from Chicago comes to Boston, and sending Paul Pierce to the land of, not exactly 10,000 lakes. So, frankly, I hate both deals. I don't think either one is really all that exciting. I've heard some talk today that the Knicks are readying a package of players for Kobe to be sent their way. The rumor has it that Kobe's interested in going to three teams, Phoenix, New York, and Chicago. But really, it only seems that Chicago has a package they could do. I don't see the Knicks having anybody that would work, even a three-team deal. And Boston still has, the combination of picks, players, and expiring contracts that makes really a good fit for a team like the Lakers. Now, I understand that not everyone's on board with this, and JB alluded to this earlier, that Eric Pincus gave his thoughts on this. So,
well, let's bring on our guest. Maybe he has some thoughts. Right now joining us, Sean Grandy from Grandy and Maxwell. They do the radio broadcast. If you don't know him, I'd be surprised. Sean, welcome to the show. Thanks a lot for coming on.
Anytime, guys. Who are we getting? We're getting Kobe? Is that what we're doing?
Well, that seems to be the rumor.
Actually, Sean, our best source, who's Eric Pincus, he's a credentialed writer for the Lakers, says that the only trade for Kobe is to the Bulls. He would not want to come to Boston. So we're trying to play around with the scenarios as to what the Bulls would give us and where it would spin down. One interesting side note that came in today is that Chauncey Billups could wind up with the Bulls because if the Bulls could pull this off, they would have some cap room even after acquiring Kobe. Where that leaves the Celtics with Pierce going to L.A., I think we would need to get back a lot more. They're talking about Gordon, P.J. Brown, and Tyrus Thomas and the number 9 pick. I think we need a big man. And, Bynum is still out there in L.A. If they would give up Bynum, maybe that would grease the wheels.
It's really hard for me to envision Kobe leaving L.A. as much as he's trying to force it right now. I think they'll only trade him to the Eastern Conference. I love these guys that say, all right, I want out. I want to be traded. This is unacceptable, but I'll only be traded to these two or three teams. Amazing.
Well, it's the Lakers that say they want him in the East, and it's Kobe saying, okay, if I have to go to the East, it's the Bulls. I'll tell you where this started coming from, Sean, and Eric Pincus has been saying for a couple of weeks that the Buss family was just fed up and that he'd insulted them finally one time too many when he came back at them about the Shaquille O'Neal business when he called them liars. And he said, you just don't cross that line with Jerry Buss. Once you cross that line with him, he'll let Kobe go. And they met in Italy, I think it was, a few days ago. And according to Pincus, it's very possible at this point that he really is on his way somewhere. I mean, sooner or later, they all get traded, all these guys like Vince Carter and Tracy McGrady. You know, they start yammering, but sooner or later, they get their wish.
And they bring their value down, which is the biggest problem for the team. And the Lakers it is such a star culture there. They don't have the option of trading Kobe Bryant for 4 young players. They're going to have to bring a marquee player back that they can sell their $1,000 and $5,000 courtside seats. It's worth it to see. And I'm not sure who that is they can get back, because Jermaine O'Neal is not that kind of player, even though that probably makes the most sense of any of these Kobe scenarios. So I think in this case, generally speaking, in a business in general, the best thing to do is everybody just to cool off. The best thing is not to have any more Jerry Buss, Kobe Bryant conversations and just let everything cool off. You certainly want to explore it and look at all the options you possibly can, but it's so difficult to find a team to match up with when you're talking about trading a star player like that. Forget just the trauma that would be involved in trading Kobe from the Lakers with your franchise and your organization and the fans. Just finding a team to match up is very difficult. You notice how all the Chicago packages have changed over the last couple of years. That's an indication of how good Chicago has gotten. It used to be Dang and Heinrich, or Heinrich and Curry. And now they're talking about Tyrus Thomas and, Ben Gordon and guys like that. And that's an indication of just how good Heinrich has gotten, how good Dang has gotten. And they already obviously made the deal for Curry, getting all the picks. So it's an indication of how far the Bulls have gone up in the world. Remember, we were talking a couple of years ago, would you do Paul Pierce for Curry and Heinrich, or Dang and Heinrich, or Dang and Curry? And now it would be tough to, while Dang outplayed Paul Pierce this past year. So it's very, very difficult timing-wise to make deals like that.
Yeah, I think, it's good to hit up the show with. We get a little excitement, but there's nothing substantial. So I'm willing to move on, Sean. And I've got something, more Celtics-related that's been on my mind for a few weeks now. And I guess, it probably started with the Shira Springer column that told us that Doc Rivers' extension really was only a guarantee of between $1 and $2 million. Then we saw Tony Brown walk out the door to Milwaukee. Now we hear from WCBB that Chris Wallace is likely to be announced as the general manager in Memphis as early as tomorrow. What's happening in the front office? And do you hear anything about who might be coming in to fill these positions? Rats leaving a sinking ship? What do you think?
I think Chris Wallace has been, I think it is a credit to the personality of Chris Wallace that he has been with this organization for the last 4 years, a credit to his versatility, that a guy, that Danny Ainge basically came in, and Chris Wallace was able to be a useful member of the organization. And you have to have a certain sort of ego or a certain lack of ego to be able to sort of go along and get along in the situation you're in, which is a very awkward one. for him, certainly. I think that he was a strong, you know, I think a decent candidate. Somebody was making a joke, certainly, only, you know, only in America and only in the NBA can the, you know, entitled general manager of the second worst team in the NBA get the job as the general manager of the worst team in the NBA. But, you know, the sinking ship thing, I think it's a tenuous situation. I think with Tony Brown, I don't think Tony Brown and Chris Wallace, I don't think they could be any less related. I think that Tony Brown wanted some certainty. He wanted a situation to take care of himself and his family beyond this year. And as you guys have been outlining, you know, the Doc Rivers situation beyond this year is sort of tenuous and based on performance and based on incentives. And it, Tony Brown had the opportunity with all the shuffling going on with Jimmy O'Brien taking his old staff back to Indiana. There are opportunities around the league. Tony Brown has been a lead assistant and is a, you know, a head coaching candidate, certainly one of those guys that gets talked about. So he felt worthy of a situation where he was going to have at least 2 years, like most of the top coaches feel. And so I don't think it's him abandoning ship. I think it's what a lot of, you know, I've heard sentiment from you guys want, which is to shorten the leash on the coaching staff that was here. And I think it was Tony Brown's choice to say, I don't want a short leash. And that's why he left. I don't think those two things are really related. And I don't think it's rats off a ship. But the reality is, this is a pretty big season coming up for the Boston Celtics. So I think this is what a lot of people wanted, was more scrutiny, shorter leash, more attention on the coaching staff. I think this is, I mean, am I wrong? Isn't this what people kind of wanted and feel?
We sure did. It was a great relief to read that insurer's column. We were beginning to think, you know, that the ownership had lost their marbles. Are you hearing anything about who might be coming in? Danny said, oh, we might not even fill that lead. Or I think it was Doc Rivers said, we might not even fill that lead coaching position. Are they going to get a GM, a head scout, a lead coach?
I don't think this is the time of year when you're inside 2 weeks of the draft and the free agency period, even though, you know, I think you have the people in place, decisions have already been made regarding, not decisions have been made, but you're looking at the draft right now, you're looking at free agency, and you're looking at putting your team together. Whoever you're going to bring in any of those spots is not someone you need to bring in on the 17th of June. And the 17th of June is about, you know, gearing up for what you've been planning for weeks and months and in some ways years in terms of salary-wise and free agency. So I don't think it is, and nor should it be, the top priority right now. It's, you know, it's a fun thing to talk about, but heck, this is the age of, this is the day of trade rumors and draft picks. Are you going to trade the pick or keep the pick, and who should you take? So I'm not sure it's the top priority right now.
Well, thank you for leading right into that. Boy, yeah, this is great. Sean, I was going to say, you know, you may have a future in this. I know some people who might be able to.
I don't know about a future.
You're the man, Sean. You're the man.
let's go ahead with the draft then. We've talked about a lot of these guys. I'm a big fan of Jeff Green. My man JB is enthralled with Yee.
Actually, hold on. I got to cut in here because it's not Yee. We got an email and it was clarified on an ES. It's E, as in E in quotes. That's right, E. And I still won't be able to pronounce his last name, so I'm not sure it matters until he gets talked about a lot and I can finally nail it. But how do you pronounce the last name, Sean? Do you know? Is it Jean Leon or Jin Leon?
We have been told Jian Lian, but I don't trust, you know, this is what the NBA has told us, and that we've gotten a lot of those before the draft, and they have turned out not to be the case. So you try not to rely too much on the league, and you know, see how it goes. You meet the kid in Summer League and say, all right, son, how do you want it? This is the way it's going to be, and you give them one shot. It's funny you mention those two guys, because those are kind of my two guys all along. I think we'll stick with Yee for now, even though it is probably going to be E eventually, but everybody knows. If you say E, nobody knows what you're talking about right now. So let's say Yee for the second, is how we're going to refer to him. And I, in watching tape and a lot of tape on him, I love the skill set. Now, all of this, by the way, is going with the premise that the Celtics are going to pick at number 5, which is something that I, in my heart of hearts, don't really believe is going to happen, or I don't believe that whoever the Celtics, if they are making the 5 pick, I'm not sure that player is going to be a Boston Celtic. But nevertheless, I really like Jeff Green, too. The problem with Jeff Green and a lot of these guys, and I said this a lot, and you guys have got to get this, understand it. This is the kind of draft that if Danny was picking where he has been picking the last few years, he would clean up. He'd hit a home run if he were picking at 15 or 18 or whatever, because a Jeff Green might slip down there, or some, you know, Spencer Hawes, I don't know, he's probably not going to slip. A Nick Young might slip down there, and you'd really clean up. The problem is, on so many levels, is that number five spot, which is not just the kick in the stomach it was on lottery night, but it's just uncomfortable place to be, because as much as you like Jeff Green, and I really like Jeff Green, it might be the most ready guy at that spot to come in and contribute to what the Celtics have. Is it going to be a situation like Mike Dunleavy, where years from now you're going to be looking at Dunleavy? Well, yeah, he's a pretty good player, but he was the number three pick. And does that even matter at this point? You know, in a perfect world, you're picking lower, and if Jeff Green is the guy you'd want, you'd take him. But it's funny you mentioned those two guys, because those are two guys I really like. And I also like Noah a lot more than other people do. But, again, not a five.
Is he let me get a little bit more specific. Since you have seen E! Entertainment Television, or Ye, or however, we'll go with Ye.
Hey,
I'm with you on
we're
that.
We're having fun with it now. Imagine if he becomes a Celtic and Tommy Heisen gets his first shot at that. I mean, my goodness.
It's funny you mentioned that. There's a couple guys in the pit that were talking about that. I'm afraid of what we may get. You know, there may
we're
be
gonna
some
set back international. We're going to set back international trade relations 20
well,
years.
Well, wait a minute. You talk about Tommy. Wait till Cousy has his turn. We're going to have a wee.
Yeah.
Wee-wee on our team.
Oh, dear. Well, speaking of those two, how about Jeff Green? I mean, Jeff Green is a guy I personally believe that we need a big guy. I want to see a big guy on this team. I think there's a severe lack of quality big men on the roster right now. They need to add somebody. Jeff Green is somebody who a lot of people out there think that he's too small. He measured up at 6'9.5" in shoes. Have you seen enough of him to be able to say whether or not that will translate to being able to play power forward? I mean, I think to me, certainly Ye has the height, but you know, there's some question about his temperament. Can he, you know, is he going to be a center power forward in the NBA, or is he more like a Dirk Nowitzki? I think fit seems to be a big question right now. Is there anything that you've seen how these guys will fit into the Celtics roster?
I think, I would say a couple of things. Here is, when I look at guys going into the draft, and this is what I always say, I start with the following. What do they have that you can't teach, and what do they not have that you can teach? This is sort of the Rajon Rondo theory of drafting, that if you take a guy with you, I'm looking for the most skills and athleticism, the stuff you can't teach, on the presumption that you can improve, you know, that are the deficiencies, things they can improve. And the guys that don't shoot the ball well, shooting is something you can improve on. You're not going to get more athletic. So there's different things you look at like that. Competitive, watching guys in games. I would say, first of all, when it comes to Ye, the competition he played against is a lot better than people think it was. He's playing against a lot of, you know, professional players. It was China, granted, but he's playing against, you know, big-bodied professional players. He is not a big body himself right now. He is not going to be a true power forward rebounding player. But Jeff Green isn't either. You know, Jeff Green is a 6'9 guy. I love his game. He can defend, and he's versatile, but is he going to be a true power forward? I mean, Ryan Gomes is probably more of a true power forward in the way he plays the game than Jeff Green is right now. Could he learn it? Does he have the kind of basketball brain? My guess would be yes, but I don't think he is if you're looking at him to come in and be a, you're starting referring to him as being a big, and that's not what I think of. I don't necessarily think it'd be that way either, but Jeff Green, to me, is not a quote-unquote big. There are a couple of those guys in the draft. You know, Noah is a big. Say whatever you want about his skill set and everything else. He is a big. Jeff Green, to me, is not. He is a versatile 3-4 kind of guy.
Well, it's funny that
we have some of those on the roster.
We definitely do. But there's some things that I like about Green that maybe some of the other 3/4s on our roster don't have. Draft Express had a nice breakdown of the small forwards, and you could really see how well-rounded Green was. For a guy that they said doesn't do anything great but does everything well, I don't think it can be summarized any better than his assist-to-turnover ratio leading all the small forwards in this draft class. His assists, his total assists are really high, and the only reason he isn't blowing people out of the water in assist-to-turnover ratio is because they relied on him as a scorer for that team in many ways, and so his turnover ratio is high. I think when I'm looking at a team that's trying to build a balanced attack and people who buy into the team concept, and believe me, I think the star power of the league is definitely making a turn for the worse, especially after you watch the recent finals and LeBron's inability to keep them keep the Cavs even in the series, let alone win a game. And I think that, you know, going the way of Phoenix and trying to get a team that shares the ball and, you know, has many plans of attack against maybe a powerhouse team is the way to go. And you look at the Spurs, that's part of the reason for their success as well. You look at a guy like Jeff Green, and he might fit into this scenario that way. But I wanted to ask you, I don't know that you're a real, you know, I don't think you're big on Al Horford, or we haven't talked about his name at all. I think, Jeff Green and Al Horford are both kind of that same way, solid players. You know, Horford measured out. The big question for him was whether or not he was 6'10 or closer to 6'8, I think, is what some people said. He measured out at 6'9.5. I don't think that was in shoes. I think that was barefoot. So, you know, obviously the size is there. He's a talented guy, but again, maybe not, you know, not having athleticism. What makes you like a guy like Jeff Green, but not be so big on a guy like Al Horford?
Well, I'll say something else about Jeff Green, which you have to step back, and it's really hard. You know, it's hard for everybody to evaluate these guys, but you sort of hinted at it, which is when you're looking at stats and numbers, as we all do, because for the most part, it's the primary information you have. If you don't have the benefit of being able to watch a lot of tape on these guys, I've been lucky in that regard that I did. But you got to remember the system that these guys play in largely affects their stats as well. And Jeff Green did not play, you know, at Georgetown in a very explosive offensive system. That makes his numbers more impressive. It also makes the fact that it's very hard to project a player's game outside of if he plays a very strict college system, which Jeff Green did. That is something that to me is very positive. I don't, you know, again, I'm kind of looking at Jeff Green as a lower guy who sort of jumped up. Horford has gotten a lot of attention. You know, if you're putting a gun to my head right now saying Horford or Jeff Green, they're both on the board, who do you take? That's not a no-brainer that I would take Jeff Green. I happen to kind of like Jeff Green and always have as sort of an underappreciated guy. He's getting a lot more attention now because he just happened to go through a Celtics workout in the last couple of days, so people are just, you know, I don't want to say he's flavor, you know, he's soup du jour, but whoever the Celtics happen to be looking at on any given day gets a lot of attention. I think Horford is going to be a good, solid pro. I think you're going to step back, though, and I think his game is more of a traditional bigs game than Jeff Green, who is more versatile. And again, step back and look at the roster and ask yourself if Al Jefferson and Kendrick Perkins are going to be your guys there at that spot for 3 or 4 years, and do you want to invest your high pick in Al Horford if Al Jefferson is going to be your guy at that spot for a long period of time?
Well, I think, with the injury history, I think it's never a bad thing to have an extra big around, and I think there's definitely room for minutes that way. But let's take this in another direction, because you did say that you liked Noah, and I realize that a lot of, you know, and I'm going to throw you up some more alley-oops here. You talked a lot about Noah and saying that maybe you're a little bit higher on him than other guys. Talk about the ugly shot, and again, you know, you're talking about the system, Horford and Noah, obviously playing in an explosive system. You know, what makes you, you know, again, I understand you're saying Horford, you know, he's high-ranked and Green's climbing. I think the same would apply for Noah in your argument that way. But again, contrast and compare the Horford and Noah picks, in the context of obviously you're getting a steal if you're trading down to get Noah versus Horford, who you're taking a risk on high, who may not pan out as a superstar player down the road.
Throughout the course of this year, of this past season, one of the themes I had during the 82 games, and believe me, we were looking at times for themes, was try to isolate some players, and I did a lot of this with Doc when we would go into a city and face a team that had a certain player, whether, you know, Shane Battier is sort of the prototypical guy who I think you look for in this league. These are the kind of guys that help you win in many different ways. A lot of teams, the good teams, all have one or two on their roster. To me, I love Anderson Varejão. Anderson Varejão is not an all-star. He's not the number fifth pick in the draft, nor should he have been. But he is the kind of player that plays minutes, that does good things when he is on the floor that helps good teams win. If you don't have a chance to get Greg Oden or Kevin Durant, and you're not talking about franchise players. As I said, I still believe the player that will make the most impact in the Boston Celtics in 2007-2008 is not the player they're going to get in the draft, whether that involves a trade or it involves Tony Allen coming back healthy or whatever. I think we are, I don't want to say obsessed with the draft, we should be. It's fun. It's coming up. It's the single most important thing. And again, do you want to look down the road at, it doesn't get anyone excited, and it's not very sexy to talk about a role player with this number five pick in the draft and this pick that you suffered through a long season to get. That being said, I think Noah is that kind of player. I think he's a smart player. I think he's a hustling player. And I think he is going to have this argument on AEI this past week. Now that that's a bastion of Celtics information or insight. But nevertheless, but I think Noah is going to be a long-term, good, solid pro, and he has a chance to be one of those guys who I think is a strong seventh guy, sixth to seventh guy on a really good team. And so those are the kind of players I like. I'm looking for under-the-radar guys. And who is the next, you know, Anderson Varejao? You know, who is the next, you know, Shane Battier who's, you know, 3 or 4 years younger? Because those are the kind of guys you want to identify.
Yeah, well, you know, you mentioned Anderson Varejao, and, you know, I like the guy except when we're playing him because I'm always concerned that he's going to wipe out one of our guys. Not a bad guy to have on your team, and definitely a bad guy to have to, you know, have your best guy, you know, the best player, the future of your franchise being guarded by. Just, I'm always scared, keeping an eye on Al Jefferson and hoping he's not getting into it too much with him. Let's talk a little bit about the theme of some of these underrated guys that may be climbing up the draft, et cetera. As much as they climb up, they're just as likely to slide down. You're talking about, you know, having a role player, having the next Anderson Varejao, et cetera. I'm wondering if the Celtics, and we've been hearing this from Steve Volpett, it's been the theme, underlying theme to a lot of his articles over the last couple of weeks, and one of the things he keeps talking about and mentioning is moving down in the draft. One of the players that was recently added to the list of what was once 6 and now 8 was a player like Joakim Noah. And so what I'm wondering about in that vein is, what are the odds of them trading down? I know that Draft Express podcast talked about Spencer Hawes getting a guarantee at number 7. I don't really see Danny only trading down a couple of spots. He's going to have to go down quite a few more spots to make it worth his while. So, you know, do you see that as a reality for the Celtics? Do you think trading down and maybe picking up a veteran so they can get, you know, the kind of role player that you're talking about and still bolster a veteran on the squad? Is that a possibility?
I think it's a possibility. I think it is, you know, when the lottery first happened, it seemed like the 5 pick was going to be a difficult one to move. But that factors in, that's everybody typically overreacting in the heat of the moment or the grief of the moment or whatever. What's happening now is for every show like this where we're discussing the Jeff Greens, oh, this guy had a good workout, teams all around the NBA are falling in love with some of these different guys and starting to figure out how the draft is going to fall and starting to see what pick is the most available in that top group. You know, Atlanta wants to keep their pick. Memphis is going to want to keep their pick. I think the Celtics are probably the least interested of any of these top teams of keeping that pick because this is, you know, a broken record for me. I've been saying it for 2 years. This team needs to get older, not younger. Older, not younger. Therefore, you know, is there going to be an opportunity? I think there's always opportunities. And I think that, first of all, you're an idiot if you go into a draft unprepared to pick in any of the 60 spots. You have to know the entire draft backwards and forwards because things come up, things happen. Look at the whole draft night situation last year with the trade and Telfair and Portland and this misconception that somehow Danny would have known he could have gotten Brandon Roy. That's one of my favorite misconceptions, that the Celtics took Sebastian Telfair instead of getting Brandon Roy when that deal was made. There was no knowledge he could have actually flipped the picks to get Brandon Roy, but that put aside. Look at everything that happened. Danny might not make that deal if he knows that Rondo is going to slip, but he was prepared as that draft went on to make the move when Rondo kept slipping to jump in. And I think we're talking about, is there a possibility the Celtics, instead of picking 5th, could be picking 19th? Of course that's a possibility, but it may not come into focus until pick 18 gets made on June 28th. So, as I said, you know, going back to what I said earlier, the best case, I think, for Danny, this is one of those drafts that I think he would clean up if he were picking lower in that first round and find the guy that slips. But I find it fascinating that there's so much interest around all these younger players when there was a little Sean Marion conversation earlier this week when I was over at EEI, but I found when the Celtics would probably be more interested philosophically in getting older and getting better right now, why there's been so much more interest in the draft, I think, than possibly making a trade. And maybe just nobody thinks it's possible with some of these big names. But that, to me, has been the most interesting thing in the last couple of weeks.
Yeah, I can talk a little bit about that, Sean, before I get on to a question for you from one of our readers. But I was thinking that over myself today, and I'd almost rather psychologically take a player like Yee with tremendous potential, not knowing whether he's going to be a bust or whether he's going to be the next super all-star player, because the process is going on. I'm almost afraid of the end game, having lived through the Pitino years, where we had all this hype, all this build-up, and then the end game turned out to be Kenny Anderson and Vitaly Potapenko, and then they got traded for Vin Baker. And, you know, all of the dream, all of the vision of building a team that could compete for a championship. And we're talking about players like Gerald Green, who's not there yet, but if he becomes what he could become, and a player like Yee, if, that big if, you still can dream. You still can look at a player like Rondo and say, wow, in 2 years, won't he be something? Whereas that end game seems so final. You've squandered your resources, and you still don't have enough to consider yourself a championship contender. Your salary cap is clogged. You're in luxury tax land so that the owners are getting itchy. And if you don't get to the top, they're going to make you trade off a couple of assets. That's kind of my thinking about why psychologically, you know, maybe a lot of us are still looking for the players with potential. And along that line, I got a question on the blog today from a reader named Mosk, and that's M-O-S-K-Q-Q. I don't know if we've ever seen Mosk spelled that way, but he wants your opinion. What do you think, and specifically as possible, what Danny's probable moves on draft day or probable trades prior to the upcoming season? What players do you think he might make a move for, and both in the draft and for trades?
Well, I think that's really the question of the night, and I will say this. I think as I began, the first thing we were talking about Kobe and how extraordinarily difficult it is to make these significant moves. It's where Danny, in putting his plan together, has been able to accomplish A, B, and C, but D is folding the assets that he has acquired, salary and young players and draft picks, to land that big fish. It's because you got to get the guy on the other end of the phone to go along with it, whether it was Carlos Boozer last year, look how well that would have turned out, whether it was Allen Iverson or whatever. And I will say this to that, and this will be the, you know, everybody else is starting rumors, so why can't I? After a week, what I find fascinating is that we discussed Sean Marion. I've been asked about Rashard Lewis this week. There was even Jermaine O'Neal conversation. You guys are talking about Kobe and a possible deal with the Bulls. I must tell you, I find it very, very interesting that nobody, and I mean nobody, has said the words Kevin Garnett once to me in the last month and a half. Not once. And I am not sure there is a team that can slash would put together a better package for Kevin Garnett than the Celtics can and possibly would. And I think if you want me to go off the board, and that's it. Everybody else has started. This is a season to start rumors, and everybody writes whatever they feel like anyway. But if for no other reason than to have the discussion, after a week of Sean Marion and Rashard Lewis and Jermaine O'Neal, why not think of the biggest fish that could be out there?
I guess because we expect that Al Jefferson would be the one that they would want, and
he would.
Al might be untradeable.
Well, certainly Al Jefferson would have to go in this package. But, again, and it's really more of a philosophical issue, and I know the thought of trading Al Jefferson would be really harsh for a lot of people, but philosophically, does that make you excited? I mean, forget what can be done and what can't be done. And this, I think, is the biggest thing of all that we kind of missed. I remember it was 3 years ago when Shaquille O'Neal made the move to Miami, and Shaquille O'Neal was never going to be traded to Boston. But here's the difference, and people focus on wins and losses and what everybody went through over this 06-07 season with all the losses and the injuries, and it's a difficult time, and there's a lot of angst, and do you give the coach an extension, and, you know, general stress in Celtics Nation. But here's the point. If you step back from that and ask yourself where this team is now versus where it was 3 years ago, which Shaquille O'Neal was traded to Miami, and again, he wasn't coming to Boston, but the Celtics could not even get in that game because there was no combination of assets the Celtics could have put forth to even be in the discussion. Now, in 2007, when there is anybody out there, whether it be Allen Iverson or Sean Marion or whoever, or even Kevin Garnett with his mammoth, ridiculous contract, which is, you know, which chokes the life out of you because he makes $22 million a year, even now, the Celtics are maybe one of two or three or four teams that can make a legitimate offer for Kevin Garnett. And by legitimate, I mean an offer that the Timberwolves would say, that works. We can sell that to our fans. And that is the single biggest difference when you focus off the court and this, you know, the ridiculous series of events and outrageous fortune and the slings and arrows that the Celtics were ducking all last year with the Pierce injury and Wally going down three times and what happened with Tony Allen. When you step away from what happened on the court and you look at the big picture of the salaries and the assets and the draft picks, you realize that the Celtics really are one phone call away from, you know, bringing in a big-time player here to pay. And understand what I'm saying, fantasy or not, we live in a world in which the Celtics could theoretically bring Kevin Garnett to Boston, theoretically, without giving up Paul Pierce. And that's a pretty good world to be in.
It is. Absolutely. And, you know, it's take your earlier comment and combine it with the two. As you said, the team is one phone call away from being, you know, at the top of a lot of NBA discussion about who's possibly going to be in the mix for championship. And,
right. And, you know, I don't know what your reaction or what Celtics Blog Nation, what the reaction generally would be if you had that opportunity to do that. Obviously, you're going to lose Al Jefferson. Obviously, you're giving up the draft pick. But the Celtics, with the Zerbiak contract and with the Theo Ratliff contract, could actually pull this off. As I said, I think it's a deal. If you look at the possible things the teams could put together for Garnett, this would be one they could sell to their fans, especially they're bringing a popular player in Wally Zerbiak back. They're bringing a potential franchise cornerstone in Al Jefferson. It would give them the fifth and the seventh picks in the draft, and it would give them salary relief eventually with Theo Ratliff. You know, I don't know if that makes people squeamish or if it makes people pretty excited at the thought of having an absolute first ballot Hall of Famer here at age 31, you know, playing the second half or the final third of his career in Boston, seeing what he and Paul Pierce could do with Rajon Rondo, with Tony Allen, with Kendrick Perkins, with that group. I don't know what the reaction would be, but to me, I'm about winning games right now because we're all getting older, and the whole point is to win games. It's a pretty, to me, what boggles my mind, and the reason I'm talking about it this way, is that I find it, in this age in which we talk about anything, and we have shows like this, and we've got the internet, every possible rumor, potential, everybody knows how to use that trade checker and to throw things into it. It has boggled my mind that nobody has really talked about that, you know, about that possibility. To me, it's the single most, you know, the Celtics could end up, you know, drafting, Jeff Green could be an all-star player in the NBA. The Celtics end up keeping the pick. A lot of different things could happen. But to me, if we're all sitting here in fantasy land anyway, why not fantasize about the single most exciting thing that could happen?
Well, I think part of it is that we've been, over the past three, four, you know, since Danny Ainge came back to town, we've been taught to, you know, love the new players, love the young players, you know, celebrate them, you know, love them for all their mistakes, you know, kind of say, attaboy, you know, that sort of thing. And because it's been so long since Ainge has pulled the trigger on a deal, and we've had so many of these rumors, it's been Iverson and O'Neal and Gasol, and it's almost as if some fans are saying, maybe it won't ever happen. And that's, it's a real danger I think Danny Ainge has, is that he has one bullet left in his gun in many cases to make this, to, you know, as you said earlier, he has really this 1 year for Doc Rivers, if that, and perhaps maybe a little more than that for Danny Ainge, to pull the trigger on a deal and it's got to be the deal. And if not, you know, they're both going to be, you know, on TV and working for TNT, and it's a very frightening situation, but it's very exciting. Like you said, one phone call away from possibly, you know, making a lot of people happy for many years.
Well, it just underlines how hard it is. When I was doing Dennis Callahan the other day on EEI, we got a fax from someone, and he talked about, I think it was in reference to Sean Marion, and he talked about, well, yeah, so what if you got Sean Marion and it made you better this year, you know, and you had Sean Marion and Paul Pierce, and, you know, maybe they'll get you to the second round of the playoffs, but it's just a quick fix. And I read that, and I thought about that, and I think we all get lost in that the second round of the playoffs means you're one of the top eight out of 30 teams in the NBA. And after a year in which you were the 29th, wouldn't anyone want to sign up for that? That we all, you know, there's only one team that could win. There's only four or five teams that have even a legitimate shot to win a championship. So I don't want to, you know, I don't want to always be this guy that's lowering expectations. I am the guy who for 6 months was trying to warn people not to get too excited about the lottery because people just don't want to look at the math. But the reality of it is, you just want to put yourself in that position to win as many games as possible, and then you just never know. Things, you know, you have to, you know, look at what the Timberwolves did. That's actually a very good example because they rolled the dice, and they brought in Sam Cassell, and they brought in Latrell Sprewell to play with Kevin Garnett, and they, you know, that was the year that Wally was hurt, and they had veterans like Troy Hudson and guys like that, and they rolled the dice. They took their shot, and if they didn't end up with key injuries and Cassell getting hurt and Zerbiak being hurt, they had a very, very good chance to win the championship in 2004. But to me, that's what you have to do. You got to go all out and take your shot, and that's why, to me, the number five pick is, you know, it's going to be a good thing for the Boston Celtics. But as I said, it's not the thing that's going to get you exponentially better. And I think maybe we get a little too caught up in the youth culture, and we lose sight of the fact that this is a league, and I don't think I need to remind anyone who can hear me now who just won the championship, that you don't win in this league by continually drafting 20-year-old players.
Well, that is a good point, and I think anyone who looks at the Spurs right now notes that, you know, seeing Michael Finley there crying on the stage after they won, you know, there's a lot of players on that team who have, you know, stood back and they could have gone and made more money elsewhere and had a bigger role and more shots, but they stood back and said, you know, I want to win a championship. I want to be successful, and right now we're as far from that as you possibly can be. You know, with the young players and everything. Before we do let you go, Sean, I wondered if you could maybe give us a quick synopsis on what you think about the two names that people have talked about, and even though you did so on EEI earlier this week, maybe could you talk about what Sean Marion or Rashard Lewis would mean for this club?
You know what, I'll start with Rashard Lewis. I'm not a real big fan. You know, for his skill set. I get a little bit trepidatious about the guys that have the really strong years before their contract is up when they go into their free agent year and they're about to get their big deal, as he is about to. He's a 6'10 guy. You know, we're talking about guys. Geez, I don't know if Yi, which is what we're still going to call him tonight, if he projects to be a real power forward at 6'10. Well, what's Rashard Lewis? Rashard Lewis is a very, you know, he's a very good NBA player. Wherever he goes, he's going to help the team he's with next year win some more games, most likely. But Rashard Lewis, to me, isn't a build-around franchise guy. Sean Marion is a guy, you know, I didn't like Sean Marion his first couple of years in the league. I didn't quite grasp it, and it's always tough. There's the Steve Nash factor with all the Phoenix guys. You don't really know how much to attribute to Nash. But remember, he had become an elite player in the NBA before Steve Nash got there. Again, very versatile, you know, can get your rebound when you need it, obviously can score. I always describe, and we talk about these guys in the draft, well, this guy's shot doesn't look very good. Who has a worse-looking shot in the NBA than Sean Marion? I'm always reminded of the great Harvey Penick.
It's about to be Noah. It's about to be Noah.
Well, okay, well, that's a good example. I mean, who's right? And yet Sean Marion makes it work. And I'm always reminded of the Harvey Penick, the legendary golf instructor, who said, you know, if you have a bad swing, you're not going to play well. If you have a bad grip, you're not going to be a good golfer. But if you have a bad swing and a bad grip and you're playing at a certain level, you've obviously figured out how to make it work, and Sean Marion makes it work. To me, he's a, you know, he's a big time player. It would be fascinating to see how he would fit on this roster. But again, in that situation, you're not giving up an Al Jefferson. So you're talking about a, you know, Pierce, Marion, Jefferson front court, which obviously would do a lot of damage in the Eastern Conference. I just don't think. I think Phoenix is crying a little poor mouth here. I'm not sure that is the deal. Just as I said earlier, in my own opinion, that the Celtics probably can make the best offer there is on the table for Kevin Garnett. I'm not sure they can make the best offer there is for Sean Marion, or one that would be acceptable to as an organization to the or the, their fans.
Because it sounds like the Suns just want to dump contracts anyway. Let's, you know, we've got to.
Hey, they give us Marcus Banks back.
Yeah,
that was a good deal, huh?
Yeah, you know, they let us get Rondo. And they signed that guy to a long contract. That, you know, if Banks is included in the deal, I actually think it's a deal breaker.
let me let you in on a little secret. Somebody goes, oh, here's something to watch for. Whenever a player signs a contract with the team and your eyebrows go up and you say, wow, why did they give that guy that much money? Invariably, you will find one game. I'm telling you, you'd be amazed at how this works. You will find one game that player had against that team at some point in the previous couple of years in which they had a great night, maybe a career night, and I'm always, you used to be amazed how many times this happens. Whenever your eyes open at a, you know, at a free agent signing like that, and remember a game Marcus had, there was a couple of games the Celtics played 2 years ago when they didn't have Gary Payton.
There was one upset of Phoenix, wasn't there, when Antoine came back?
When Antoine came back, the Celtics played, I want to say it was a back-to-back in Utah. And the first game, Antoine's first game was in Utah. And then I'm pretty sure we went to Phoenix, right? You know, obviously, if you're online right now, you can look this up pretty quickly. And there was a game in which Marcus and Delonte played without Gary Payton. And they were, I don't even know if the stats would reflect it, but they were tremendous. It was maybe Marcus' best game, one of his best games as a member of the Celtics. And it's always just invariably, you watch, it's that team. Again, you always remember that player. You know, by that theory, the Celtics would have signed Dan Gadzarich a long time ago. But invariably, you'll find a player that kills a team or has strong games against a certain team, and then it's not the millions of dollars you put into scouting and basketball's equivalent of sabermetrics and all the other stuff, but it's that, you know, kind of that gut feeling you had of this one guy. I remember it happened with Mark Jackson, the center Mark Jackson, when he got that big contract. He had a career-high game against Minnesota. I remember a case with Brian Skinner, who had a big game in the preseason, I want to say, against the Clippers, playing for somebody. You'd be amazed how often that happens.
Yeah, well, that's a great thought, and it's a good point. I can't even believe I remember that game back against Phoenix where they pulled that one out. But that was probably the only game where Marcus Banks went into the paint and didn't get stuffed, you know, by the most immobile seven-footer you've ever seen. But I got one last question for you, Sean, before we let you go. It's an email question from Lance G. He almost feels like a co-host now because he's always got a question for our guest. I absolutely love it. And he says, which new Celtics player, Wally, Telfair, Ratliff, Rondo, Poe, or Ray, has best adjusted to the Celtics team/organization and the city of Boston, and which player has the best future with this franchise? Thanks to Grandy and Max for their entertaining and insightful broadcast. Keep up the work. Good work.
Well, thanks, obviously, for the words, and I'm sure Max would echo that if he were here with me. You know, I'm not sure there's one specific answer to that, because those were a lot of different categories. You know, I'd say a lot of the guys have assimilated to the city. Wally, you know, who was an East Coast guy, came right to town and bought a house and has done really well. I think probably the most popular, the number one answer on the board to that question would probably be Rondo, with the way he's fit in with this team and his particular skill set. And if you were looking for all the different bright spots about the second half of last year, certainly the last 20 or 25 games of Rajon Rondo got you pretty excited about the future. What was the second part of the question?
He was asking which one has the future with the franchise. Which one has the best future?
I think that's probably Rondo, too. I think everyone was pretty excited about what Leon Poe was able to. The reality is that Rajon Rondo is going to be a player that, you know, he's a very unusual player, but he is someone that is obviously shown that even as a rookie, you know, point guard is the toughest spot to play as a rookie coming into the NBA. There is no question. And, you know, I wasn't sure about Rondo at first, and he won me over because he is extraordinary. basketball instincts. And again, it's what I was saying earlier about drafting guys. You look for the things you can't teach, because those will always be there, and hopefully you can teach the rest. And so I think that's one of the most exciting things on a list of, you know, things to be excited about the Celtics, who are clearly going to – we keep talking about them being the 29th team in the NBA and the next to last team in the NBA, but that's not the reality of last season. The reality of last season was the Celtics were a borderline playoff 36-37 win team if they were healthy. So if they are healthy, they're coming back starting at that point, regardless of what they had. So that's another reason I think to be excited about next year. But I think that Rondo is probably the answer to that all the way around.
Excellent. I know everybody on the show likes that assessment. I know JV and John would agree. Let me just say, Sean, thank you very much for coming on the show. And we're looking forward to talking with you on draft night. I guess we're going to get you probably in the second half of the show late night. And you've got something you're going to be doing that night as well.
Well, I know I'm not supposed to. Well, technically, you guys are now competing with the big boys. But Max and I will be on EEI on our new flagship station doing a draft show from 6 to 9. But you guys will be on much later. So when we are all done, we will I will absolutely check in with you guys and see what the hardcore is.
Excellent.
I have to entertain the masses, but when I get to be with you guys, we get to talk about things like sabermetrics and who the Celtics might take with the 22nd pick, and that's a lot more fun.
Thank you, Sean. Very nice.
Thank you. Have a good night, Sean. Appreciate it. As always, you've been a great guest.
Thanks, guys.
Sean Grandy, he does the broadcast with Cedric Maxwell, and he's a great guest for the show. We really appreciate him coming on every week. We've got a little bit of phone lines are open. We're going to go to break in just a second, but I think we could squeeze in one phone call. So if somebody wants to squeeze in before the break, the phone lines are open, 866-751-9649. You got to call right away, though, because we are about to go to break, and we'll be coming back with Home Run Baker after that. Really interesting comments by Sean, guys. You know, I think Joakim Noah is starting to climb draft boards a little bit and generate a little interest. You know, he got added to the Celtics 8 or, you know, top 8, I guess, expanded from 6 to 8. I just think that that's a major indication of a possibility of trading down. And the other thing he said interesting that had the people in the pit just throwing up their hands in exasperation was the willingness to trade Al Jefferson to get Kevin Garnett. Didn't really get a chance to share my own thoughts on that, but I'll tell you, I'm a little hesitant to do that. I would really want Garnett and Jefferson side by side, and I don't know that we have what it takes to get that done. But, you know, I think that that's a little bit why Garnett talks have quieted down, because there have been other veterans that players are willing to accept because they want to hold on to Al Jefferson. What do you guys think?
I think that would be – I'm not for – I'm a big Jefferson guy. You guys know that. I'm not for that. I think you don't trade 21-year-old power forwards who have uncommon abilities near the basket offensively, and who have improved greatly defensively, and who can rebound and da-da-da-da-da. You don't trade those guys. I mean, right now we don't know how many good years Kevin Garnett has left. We don't know how many years – he would be, or even if he'd want to stay in Boston and not opt out of his contract here. So I'm not for that. I think, like you said, you need to compare those two together. And Jefferson is a guy that he's the future here. You know, it's not, Kevin Garnett's not the future. We don't know how long, you know, players like Kobe Bryant and Kevin Garnett are going to last in this league. They entered in as 18-year-old players. Will they want to play, you know, 25 years in this league? You know, which would put them at, you know, roughly the age of 43, probably not. 20 years, 38, I mean, that's a long career by anyone's standards. Even Kareem Abdul-Jabbar, you know, barely played more than that. So I'm not really for that idea. I think there's a lot unknown about Garnett, especially his contract just is a killer. I think what I'd like to see, though, is what I thought was interesting that Sean mentioned, too, is you know, his belief that this team needs to get better now. And, you know, he made the point last year, the last time we had him on, that he'd rather see us trade Rajon Rondo for Eric Snow. That's the type of guy he is. But, you know, I think, you know, guys like, the fact he's looking to E, Yee, whatever, Yee Entertainment Television.
You know what, we need the Yee buzzer. From now on, when somebody calls him Yee, we're just going to have to go, Yee. We need the Yee buzzer.
Yeah, yeah. I think that the fact that he's so interested in having somebody who's ready to play now and still looks at Yee as somebody who may be a good fit here, one of the two guys he thinks would be a good fit here with Jeff Green, that kind of gives me a little bit more confidence that he may be more ready to play now than I thought.
Yeah, I look back at like the Chicago Bulls, who tried to build. They had a lot of number one draft picks, picked in much better spot than we, and they wound up being the team that traded Elton Brand and Tyson Chandler. They would look awfully good with that team now, and that team took their end game and took Wallace. And they aren't getting any better. They're now talking about Kobe or something else to try to get them over the top. And, you know, maybe they can, maybe they can't. But I like the chemistry. Somebody mentioned that earlier. I like the bond that our players have formed. And I always go back to Kevin Garnett when he cold-cocked that rookie, Richard, who was guarding him too close in practice, you know. And he's a petulant, mean guy. He's always had his own way with everything since he's 12 years old. Everybody's been patting him on the back, telling him how great he is. And it's just something about that attitude that I wouldn't be thrilled with, as great a player as he is.
Well, as we go to break, I want to just throw out a quick comment that I happen to notice on the comments on the CelticsBlog.com post about our show. It's from Sec22. He says, nice comment by Grandy about a head-scratching signing where a player was awesome in a single game, and it explains the signing, saying it was the Banks game in Phoenix when Peyton was out just after the Walker rental. And then here he goes. Here's the stinger. In my opinion, it absolutely was true of the Vin Baker game for Seattle at the Fleet the year before he was brought in. Ouch. Vin Baker. You know, I got to say, if there is one major deal that Danny Ainge deserves credit for, it is weaseling out of the Vin Baker deal. If there's one thing you could be happy about, it's the fact that he weaseled out of that deal. I'm not sure it got us anything. You know, it didn't give us cap space or whatever, and I think we'd still have the players we have on board now. But the simple fact that we didn't have to talk about Vin Baker for 3 years makes me happy. We'll be back after this with Home Run Baker.
Celtic Stuff Live is brought to you by Garber Family Dentistry in Salem, Mass. Garber Family Dentistry is a practice that treats both children and adults using modern equipment. That includes intraoral cameras so that you can see what they see, and digital radiography. That's 90% less radiation than conventional x-rays. They also use sedation for people who experience anxiety during dental procedures. That's Garber Family Dentistry. Give them a call, 978-744-8495.
How about 1 million and a half? 1-1, 1-1, go ahead. Thank you. 1-1 now, 50 out of the bid. 1-1 now, 50 last call. Sold 1,000,001. Thank you. Bidder number 225.
Allen Auction Company, specializing in distinctive properties and municipal auction services. Using innovative sales and marketing strategies, they ensure that the auction day experience is both positive and profitable. Visit their website, allenauction.com, or call 781-592-8100.
Are you in the market for rare coins or precious metals? Gold Rarities Gallery is one of the nation's leading rare coin and precious metals dealers, where you'll deal directly with the owner and not a salesman. Highly competitive prices and a selection of high-quality coins ranging from a few $100s to major seven-figure rarities, Gold Rarities Gallery has placed some of the finest and rarest coins ever struck at the U.S. Mint. Put over 20 years of coin market experience to work for you. Visit Gold Rarities Gallery on the web at goldrarities.com. That's goldrarities.com. You'll be glad you did.